Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
Okay, episode 3 of Hegel, the Georg Hegel, George Hegel, I think it's Wilhelm as well, Georg Wilhelm Ludwig Hegel, born in 1770, died in 1831. Brilliant, trying to recall that information. We're halfway through reading it, and there's a bit of fragments of information that are coming up. I thought I'd have an overview at this juncture, looking at his quotes. And one of the things you do get from brainy quotes is what they say is always good. And digging in, I might read the quotes again, because there's some quite memorable quotes there about... One I sort of liked is the difference that a learner finds fault and an academic or someone who's really knows about it looks at the elements of good within everything, which I think is a very good thing. And of course, Hegel is the founder of Marxism. It's heavily quoted, a German thinker, a sort of Christian thinker in terms of providing a mechanism to go forward. So it's hard to say seeing revolutions, he devised a mechanism to explain them, and then that mechanism was then subsumed into a revolutionary movement of Karl Marx. And looking up the Marxist quotes, at least they're very good, because they're sort of a level above it, because you click on it and it takes you back into the source. You can read it for yourself in context. And this is really a thing of the internet, in that what's happening is that the people composing the information are not critical of it when they put it up there. But this appears to be, there is a solution that the Marxists, putting up the Marxist page, of doing quotes from Hegel, they've gone that step forward. And I think we can go another step further forward, is when you have a page, have a citation page, which people reading that page afterwards can go and actually link citations for it. So although the author themselves may not cite it, people can see that, give it a rating value on top of it, sort of like the next sort of internet level. Though we haven't thought of it. Now, the important thing about Hegel is that he produced the dialectic, dialectical materialism. He looked at revolution. But the important thing is that he said in terms of production, that the people produce, and they produce the surplus. The slaves don't get the surplus, but the masters get the surplus, and which is, goes the surplus value of labour. Is very much a Marxist idea, but when it's actually produced by Hegel. And it seems quite obvious that, and then Marx went further saying that this is because the people own the means of production. So they own the means of production, and therefore you supply the labour, and the labour produces a surplus value from owning the means of labour, which is very important. Now, we're going back here. Heraclitus is someone that I'm going to have to read up about. So he's important in terms of trying to get into the mindset. So this is, I've forgotten what the area of this is. It's called, it's basically... Heraclius, I can't pronounce him, and this seems to be the logic for producing the dialectic, that is thesis, antithesis, synthesis. It's called triad coming through. I wonder if we actually get to talk about it. So he is A, not A, therefore that's infinite. A plus what's not an A is infinite. It really is almost unmeaningful, because you may know A, but you may not know not A. Hegel has extracted that from Heraclitus. rack lit us. He rack lit us. So it's really sort of amazing. So he has these themes and thoughts which don't quite line up, and he's basically a populist. He's a mechanist person, and often people want the future to be now, and they're realizing that they are dealing with vintage ideas and vintage technology. Even the latest technology now is vintage in 50 years to come, so there's not that sense coming through. I'm going to continue reading. For Hegel, the inner movement of reality is the process of God thinking as manifest in the evolution of the universe and nature as thought. That is, Hegel argued that when fully and properly understood, reality is being thought by God as manifest in a person's comprehension of this process in through philosophy. So he says that philosophy is in actual fact a real thing, and because we're all in God's thoughts, which is sort of the Platonic viewpoint that there are forms, that we are all in a God simulation package. It's sort of pretty amazing to read and try and put across. I really have to reread all these things. Since human thought is the image of the fulfillment of God's thought, God is not ineffable. I don't know what ineffable means. So incomprehensible has to be unutterable. That's what ineffable means. But can be understood by the analysis of thought and reality. Just as humans continue to correct the concept of reality through dialectic process, that is, I believe this and what's not, rather than conflict, I move on to a next generation to do it. It's really Socratic thought gone mad. So God himself becomes more fully manifest through the dialectical process of becoming. So he now has a religious process to get to God. For his God, Hegel does not take the logos of Heraclitus, but refers rather to the nous, N-O-U-S, of Anaxagoras, although he may well have regarded them as the same, but he continues to refer to God's plan, which is identical to God. So your understanding of God is by the phenomenological of God's plan, whatever this is. So it's deeply religious. So it's deeply, deeply religious. And Marx takes that off to the atheistic aspect of it. Whatever the N-O-U-S, nous thinks at any time is actually substance and identical to limited being, but more remains to be thought in the substrate of non-being, which is identical to pure unlimited thought. That's a bit rich, isn't it? The universe is becoming, as becoming, is therefore a combination of being and non-being. In particular, is never complete itself, but to find completion is continually transformed into more comprehensive, complex, self-relating particulars. The essential nature of being for itself is that it is free in itself, that is, does not depend on anything else such as matter for its being. Limitation represents fetters which must constantly be casting off as it becomes freer and more self-determining. What a load of rank. I think this is, for me, I've got an image of entropy always increasing, but life being able to, like, you know, light flowing from the sun flows downhill, but essentially you can create a pond of energy, of entropy reversal, and selective entry. So life increases entropy, but it redistributes entropy. So it increases the entropy of the system, but reduces the entropy of a little area. And yeah, I can't see how this goes in with the modern physics. Although Hegel began philosophizing with a commentary on Christian religion and often expresses his view that he is a Christian, his ideas are not acceptable to some Christians, even though he has a major influence on 19th and 20th century theology. I think I've read that. Religion. So obviously you'll hear me go back and you can see the fatigue coming in. Obviously, hopefully I'm not as fatigued now. As a graduate of Protestant seminary, Hegel's theological concerns were reflected in many of his writings and lectures. Hegel's thoughts on the persons of Jesus Christ stood out from the theologies of the Enlightenment. He has posthumously published lectures on philosophy and religion by his sons, Part 3. Hegel has shown as being particularly interested in the demonstrations of God's existence and non-mythological proof. He says that, or he espouses that, quote, God is not an abstraction, but a concrete. He actually believes that. God is considered in terms of his eternal idea, capital idea, and has to generate the sun, S-O-N-E, as distinguish himself from himself. So he sort of got the trilogy, that is, he is everything, but to actually produce something that is comprehensible is the sun. That's an interesting view. He is the process of differentiation, namely love and spirit. This means that Jesus is the Son of God, is posited by God over against himself as other. Hegel sees both the relational unity and the metaphysical unity between Jesus, God, and the Father. To Hegel, Jesus is both divine and human. Hegel further attests that God, as Jesus, is not only died, but rather, a universally takes place. God, that is to say, maintains himself in process, and latter is only the death of death. God rises again to life, and thus things are reversed, complete. You can imagine this is a torment of Christianity. It's completely illogical at the center of it. Except logic twists in front of it. It's sort of like a stone in the path. You stub your toe on and it moves around. That's hard to say. The philosopher Walter Krafman has argued that there was great stress on the sharp criticisms of traditional Christianity appearing in Hegel's so-called early theological writings. Huffman admits that Hegel treated many distinctively Christian themes and sometimes could not resist equating his conception of the spirit Geist with God instead of saying clearly, in God I do not believe, spirit suffices me. Krafman also points out that Huffman's references to God or the divine and what's the spirit do on the classical Greek as well as Christian connotations of the term. Krafman goes on, this is interesting to look at. In addition to his beloved Greeks, Hegel saw before him an example of Spinoza and, in his own time, the poetry of Goethe, Schiller and Hölderlin, who also liked to speak of gods and the divine. So he, too, sometimes spoke of God and more often of the divine, and because he occasionally took pleasure in insisting that he was really closer to this than or that Christian tradition than some theologians of his time. He's sometimes been understood as having been a Christian. This is a really major point that the Marxists hate. You know, how can a non-Christian, and the hallmarks of it, interesting, is that the Americans go forward as Christian, continuity of the Christian vote, yet modern theories have to break free of Christianity. According to Hegel himself, his philosophy was consistent with Christianity. This led to Hegelian philosopher, jurist, and political Carl Friedrich Gödel to write a treatise demonstrating the consistency of Hegel's philosophy with the Christian doctrine of the immortality and of the soul. Gödel's book on the subject was titled Von der Bewusstsein für die Überbildlichkeit der Menschchildren, sie im Licht the speculative philosophy on Osterglab, whatever that is, but you can see it's speculative. So he was not a dinky-dye philosopher. It's Hegel. He was a speculative philosopher. So this is one where speculative, you'd think of an innovative, entrepreneurial one where you set up a situation and it's like a startup. Hegel seemed to have an ambivalent relationship with magic, myth and paganism. He formulates an early philosophical example of detachment, a disenchantment narrative, arguing that Judaism was responsible both for realizing the existence of Geist, his spirit soul, by extension, for separating nature from ideas of spiritual magical forces and challenging polytheism. However, Hegel's manuscript, The Oldest Systematic Program of German Idealism, suggests that Hegel was concerned about the perceived decline in myth and enchantment of his age, and therefore called for a new myth to fill the cultural vacuum. Isn't that beautiful? Do you think Marx is the new myth? But the new myths, the rebirth, like Wagner is a new religion. It's hard to say that the Nazism is a religious movement. Hegel continues to develop his thoughts on religion both in terms of how it was to be given Wissenschaftlich or theoretically rigorous, which in the context of his own system, and most importantly with how a fully modern religion should be understood. Now his works, okay, there are four works. Hegel published four works in his lifetime: The Phenomenology of the Spirit, Science of Logic, Encyclopedia of Philosophical Sciences, Elements of Philosophy of Right, whatever that means. So Science of Logic is the core of philosophy. Oh dear. Posthumous work. In the last 10 years of life, Hegel did not publish another book, but thoroughly revised the Encyclopedia. In his political philosophy, he criticized Karl Ludwig von Haller's reactionary work, which claimed the laws were not necessary. He also published some articles early in his career and during his Berlin period. A number of his works on philosophy of history, religion, aesthetics, and history of philosophies were compiled by lecture notes of his students and published posthumously. It's by Hegel, Gregor Wilhelm Friedrich, whatever it is, Legacy. There are views of Hegel's thoughts a representation of the summit of the early 19th century Germany's movement of philosophical idealism. That is, can we have a nirvana? And of course, there's various people who tore this down, saying that idealism would just become boring. Okay. It stuns me at how anyone could, die for an ideal. So surely dying for an ideal, it contradicts it. I don't know. So this is existentialism and historical materialism of Marx, historicism and British idealism. So dialectical materialism is Marx's thing. I don't quite understand. I may have to read Marx or something. Hegel's influence was immense both within philosophy and other sciences. Throughout the 19th century, many shares of philosophy around Europe were held by Hegelians, Soren Kierkegaard, Ludwig Friedrich, Karl Marx, and Friedrich Engels, amongst others, were deeply influenced by, but also strongly opposed to, many of the central themes of Hegel's philosophy. Scholars continue to find and point out Hegelian influences and their approaches in a wide range of theoretical and or learned works, such as Clough von Clausewitz's Magnum Opus on the Great Strategies of War. Whoa! So, Clough von Clausewitz is what all us Aussie officers are trained on, so I just can't... Oh, that's a bit of a shock. And, of course, it now means the centre of gravity thought. It's also interesting that the idea that if you've got a problem, you try and synthesise something above it, which is the sort of Hegelian philosophy. Wow. I might read von Clausewitz's. Wow. Just check on time. Yeah, I'll have to go eventually off to an RSL meeting. Wow, that's shocked me. I can sort of see how military strategy is based on not. And obviously, if you are a minor, if you're the not And the main thing is about the not taking across through that synthesis route. Really interesting. And then that sort of makes the... gee whiz, that would really change. I really should read von Clausewitz, because I didn't actually read all his work. After less than a generation, Hegel's philosophy was suppressed and even banned by the Prussian right wing, and was firmly rejected by the left wing in multiple official writings. At that period, Bruno Brauer, Hegel's influence waned until the philosophy of the British idealism in the 20th century. Hegelian Western Marxism that began with Gorky Lucas in the United States, Hegel's influence is evident in play pragmatism. The more recent movement of communitarianism has a strong Hegelian influence. Well, gee, that's a shock. So Clausewitz is my bedrock of practical philosophy. Sort of like, which is interesting that you're looking at philosophical processes and actual philosophical resources. She was like, I really want to read Clausewitz again. And it's pretty amazing. Okay. Some of Hegel's writing was intended for those in advanced knowledge of philosophy, such as the Encyclopedia was intended as a textbook for university course. Nevertheless, Hegel assumes that its readers are well-versed in Western philosophy. Especially crucial are Aristotle, Immanuel Kant, and Kant's immediately successors, more prominently Johann Gottlieb Fichte and Frederick Wilhelm Schelling. So this is, of course, my friends, why... if you're reading philosophers and they assume your knowledge of philosophers, you have to really throw yourself at the field. Without this background, would be well advised. Those without this background are well advised to begin one of the many general introductions to his thoughts. Oh God, I shouldn't read it. In fact, Hegel himself argues in his Science Logic that German language was particularly conductive to philosophical thought. You know what? I actually think that maybe right. The fact that you've got these long words, new words, with the words is actually not new, but it's a construct of previous thoughts and words. Okay, according to Walter Krafman, the basic idea of Hegel's works, especially the phenomenology of the spirit, is that a philosopher should not confine him or herself to views that have been held, but penetrate these to the humanity reality they reflect. Which is actually true, that Hegel has gone for his basis and has looked at the revolution and has straddled between the two and synthesized something out of it, which has unfortunately created a monster. You know, poor people who get blocked up with the KGB on Hegel. In other words, it is not enough to consider propositions or even the content of consciousness. Quote, it's worthwhile to ask in every instance what kind of spirit would entertain such propositions, hold such views, and have such consciousness. At every outlook, in other words, is to be studied not merely as an academic possibility, but an essential reality. Krafman has argued that, as unlikely as it may sound, it is not the case that Hegel was unable to write clearly, but that Hegel felt that he must and should not write in the way in which he was gifted. I can sort of understand that. That's an entire communication problem. Okay. Left and right Hegelianism. Some historians have spoken of Hegel's influence as represented by two opposing camps. Right Hegelians, the alleged direct disciples of Hegel, at Friedrich Wilhelm's Universität, advocated a Protestant orthodoxy and a political conservatism of post-Napoleon Restoration period. Today, this faction continues amongst conservative Protestants such as the Wisconsin Evangelistic Lutheran Synod, which was founded by missionaries from Germany when the Hegelian right was active. Left Hegelians, and also known as Young Hegelians, interpreted Hegel as a revolutionary sense, leading to advocation of atheism in religion and liberal democracy in politics. There is atheism in there somewhere. In more recent studies, this paradigm has been questioned. No Hegelians of the period ever referred to themselves as Right-Hegelians, which is a term of insult originated by David Strauss, a self-styled left Hegelian. Critics of Hegel offered from the left Hegelians radically diverted Hegel's thinking into new directions and eventually came to form a disproportionately large part of the literature about Hegel. Yeah, that's right, because if he's a sort of Australian history, it gets distorted. If there's a monument for a person and a museum for the person, there's correspondingly a lopsided amount of history is tangled up with it. Left Hegelians also influenced Marxism, which inspired global movements encompassing the Russian Revolution, Chinese Revolution, and a myriad of revolutionary practices up to the present moment. One questions whether understanding the Chinese is to understand what fraction of, it's interesting that the Chinese are able to embrace capitalism for its own purposes. They're trying to synthesize it in greater China. 20th century interpretation of Hegel were mostly shaped by British idealism, ideological positivism, Marxism, and fascism. There you go. According to Benito Croce, the Italian fascist Giovanni Gentile holds the horror of having been the most rigorous neo-Hegelian in the entire history of Western philosophy and the dishonour of having been the official philosopher of fascism in Italy. However, since the fall of the Soviet Union, a new wave of Hegel scholarship arose in the West without the preconceptions of the prior schools of thought. Walter Jansky and Otto Pollinger of Germany, as well as Peter Hodgkins and Howard Kantz of the United States, are notable for their recent contribution to post-Soviet thinking under Hegel. You can imagine the Soviet Union, how your thinking changes so much. If someone's got a big 100 megaton nuke of your city, you sort of, your thinking goes, triads. Okay, this is must be his thesis, antithesis type of thing. A, not A, and the relationship between the two. Yeah, the relationship between the two. I sort of break up that third one into two parts. And that looks like my wife coming back. So I'll cover this, and that's a fair amount of work left on it. So stopping recording 22 minutes in. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.